All right. Good morning. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 8:20. The date is Wednesday, April 16, 2014. We are meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Board setting today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State on behalf of Scott Gessler, Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, Designee of Attorney General John Southers, and Sharon Eubanks, Deputy Director, OLLS, Designee of the Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services, Dan Carton. Also to my left is Steve Ward of the Secretary of State's Election Division, and to my far right is Maury Kneiser from the Attorney General's Office. Today we are meeting to consider title setting for, I can't remember how many proposed titles and rehearings. There are two titles for each measure. One is a statement and the other is a statement in the form of a question. Changes adopted by the title board to the first title in the staff draft will be considered adopted for the other title. For anyone who wishes to testify, there's a sign-up sheet on the back table. This hearing is broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website, and public restrooms are located on this floor. When the title board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the board will follow three steps. First, board members may wish to ask questions of the proponent. This is to ensure the board understands the proposal. Second, the board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution and 1-40-106.5 Colorado Revised Statute. This is because the board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. Third, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. A copy of the staff draft is on the table. Generally, we will take all testimony first, then the board will discuss and vote after all testimony has been completed. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board. Please note that we are not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting of titles. Furthermore, we are not concerned with legal or constitutional objections to the measure, except to the extent that the objections relate to the jurisdiction of the board to set titles or to the correctness of the titles and summaries themselves. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. In the interest of brevity, speakers may incorporate remarks made on the hearing in prior hearings or similar measures, and if necessary, time limits may be imposed on testimony. We're going to start with the agenda in just a minute, but I don't remember which measures they are, but I think Ms. Taylor was here to request an accommodation for her proponents on one of the measures.
Good morning, and thank you for taking that time and letting me address this. I am appearing on behalf of proponents for Initiatives 122 and 123, Amy Williams and Randy Pye. Amy Williams is traveling 4 hours outside of Denver to be here. She will be here this afternoon. I would like to not have to send her home and have her make that same trip tomorrow morning. I understand you have a very robust agenda for the next day or more, so any consideration for her situation would be greatly appreciated.
And Sharon, whose case is that?
That's Jason's. Yeah.
Okay.
So in terms of once we switch off, hopefully this morning, he would be here this afternoon. And if you wanted to proceed out of order, I think you could do that.
Okay. Who's here on? We'll just have to swap around. Once your client gets here, we'll see where we are on the agenda. Maybe it won't make any difference. Hopefully we'll get that far anyway. But if we don't, as long as, you know, some of these other people are local, then we'll see if they can come back the next day or that kind of thing. So we'll try
that
to accommodate. And since it's Jason and he's here the rest of the day, we shouldn't have a problem on staffing.
Perfect. So, I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
All right, so the order we're going to take these in is we have a few measures that have some jurisdictional concerns, and then we're going to start with the rehearings. And so anyone who's here on an actual new title that's not one of the first ones on the agenda, if you're 103 or lower, we're probably not going to get to you for a couple hours. So I just want to sort of make that clear if anybody is just waiting around. And during today, free to have drinks in the room, have your cell phones as long as you're not talking on them. You know, make yourselves comfortable. So the first item up is Initiative 2013-2014, number 107, Marijuana Tax Revenue to Establish Housing for the Disabled. If the proponents could come up to the microphone and identify yourselves for the record.
Hi, my name is Paula Rhodes. Good morning.
My name is Brian Nemeth. Good morning.
And you are the proponents on 107-108?
Yes, one of our other proponents could not make it today.
Okay, so they've substituted, Steve?
No, all three of us were.
They have both signed affidavits of designated representative.
I'm sorry, what?
They have both signed affidavits of designated representative as required by the law.
Okay. And are you the same proponents on 109 and 110?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes,
so
we are.
All right, so all four of those are the same proponents, and they were all filed together. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So the discussion that we need to have first is one on jurisdiction. And the statute indicates that the draft must be received by 3 o'clock p.m. on the 12th day before the meeting. And we received these drafts. I believe you walked them in at 4:20 they were received. Is that right?
4:20 was the estimated timestamp. She came into the lobby about 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. Okay. Do you want to say anything about the timing of these?
Yes, I would. I apologize for that. I am a person disabled by brain injury, and I have records here of my cognitive rehab testing that show that one of my deficits is through hearing and memory, and I thought that it was a 5 p.m. deadline. It is my fault. I thought I was early. However, I would like to state that I think the proposal has a great deal of merit, and I think that it is well within the government's responsibility, and this is a new source of revenue that should be used in a certain way to alleviate the suffering of people that would make the rest of society more serene.
Okay. All right. Any questions from the board?
I don't think I have a question, no.
Okay. Any discussion?
Go ahead.
In terms of the 3 o'clock deadline, I feel that it's what I would think of as a drop-dead deadline, that you make this deadline for this meeting, and unfortunately, these four initiatives did not meet that deadline. I understand the implications in terms of these folks will be able to come before the title board. They just won't be able to come before the title board until our next meeting, at which we could consider measures for a general election, which would be in December of
November.
It's actually, I think, in December after the election.
I meant
2014.
The election.
Yeah, oh, yeah. The election's in November, but I think the first meeting we can have is the first Wednesday in December of 2014. So I understand the impact, and that's unfortunate. However, I think that there are certain requirements imposed in terms of the time frame of the whole initiative process that's imposed on both proponents as well as the title board and opponents. And I think that we have to stay with those deadlines. I believe that it had to be filed by 3 p.m., and since these measures weren't, I don't believe we have jurisdiction to hear them today.
Well, I'm not convinced that it's a jurisdictional question. And given our general charge to liberally construe the statutes, unless it's clear to me, completely clear to me, that it's actually jurisdictional, I'm inclined to disagree, even though I certainly understand the arguments and think it's, at the very least, a very close call. I'm not convinced that this is a jurisdictional requirement. If it's not, then I think then I think that a substantial compliance requirement standard should apply. And I think that given that, I would vote that we have jurisdiction, that we consider these to substantially comply with the timing requirements and proceed.
And I tend to agree that the way, I mean, most of the case law is written to have to do with the close of business and not 3 o'clock, but I think that they were filed on the day. The 3 p.m. deadline is not the end of the day. So maybe if you had a 5 o'clock close of business type deadline and you physically couldn't get it filed that day, that might be a different question. But I think that at this point, it substantially complies with the statute and the intent that we read it broadly and liberally. And I would tend to agree that we have jurisdiction from that perspective. That doesn't answer the single subject question, but for those purposes, I think we have jurisdiction. So do you want to make a motion?
All right. Well, then I'll move that we consider the failure to meet the 3 o'clock time deadline to not be jurisdictional, and that we have jurisdiction at least to consider whether the measures meet the single subject requirement and set a title.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. It passes 2-1. So I guess the question is, do we want to go ahead and do these, or do we want to move to the rehearings and then come back to them?
I think we can go ahead and do them.
Go ahead and do them?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. All right. So the first one is 2013-2014, number 107. Do the proponents have any comments on the staff draft of, well, first of all, why don't you, do you have any comments on whether this is a single subject?
Is that addressed to us?
Yes.
I have cognitive deficits in abstract reasoning, and so some of that is difficult for me to determine. We were trying to use this marijuana money for a purpose that is otherwise poorly or not funded. I realize that the developmentally disabled are cared for in a certain part of the statute and constitution. We would have included them, and we had them in the earlier draft. But I sincerely believe that there's a segment of our population that has no way to develop funding mechanisms, and they're not people who can be organized to put on a charity ball. And a lot of the people who are homeless and sleeping on the 16th Street Mall probably are candidates for at least consideration if they're there because of a brain injury. And the public pays the cost of these people in prison, which is far higher. It's $30,000 per person per
okay.
year.
And I'm just going to stop you there because we can't consider whether it's a good proposal or a bad proposal.
Oh,
I mean, okay. In terms of public good, that's not really an issue for the title board. The title board's only function is to determine whether there's one subject and then set a fair and accurate title. So
okay.
That's the title up there. So your comments would be limited to whether you think that's a fair title. And
yeah, it's roughly what we were trying to do. We originally put in a very brief one and then modified it according to the comments given to us in the first hearing. And my writing skills and abstract reasoning skills are shot. I'm sorry.
But it's not yours. It's what the – this is what the legislative
that's what we
have sent this is what they've sent over to us as a proposed title. So this is as it would appear on the ballot, not as you wrote it, but as it would appear on the ballot, this would be the question.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any discussion by the board on the single subject?
No, I think it's a single subject, and I'll move that we find it to be such.
All right. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So that brings us to the title itself.
All
No, just to get us started.
Sure.
I think the title in general could be a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has a lot of details that probably isn't necessary in terms of the major features of the measure. And perhaps to start out, in terms of the statement of the single subject, usually in the statement of the single subject, we don't have a lot of details. It's more of a broad phrase, and whether something concerning state funding of permanent housing for disabled Colorado citizens with brain injuries, and then we could get into the specifics about the source, the amount, and those sorts of things. And so I would propose that we change the language starting on line one. So it would be an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning state funding of permanent housing for disabled citizens with brain injuries.
Can you see that?
Do you want to step over here?
I can see that over there, too.
Oh, okay.
And then some of the details that's currently in the staff draft in terms of that first statement, I would have in statements and phrases later on in the title.
Okay.
And so I don't know if you want me to just sure. go ahead and well.
Yeah, go ahead. I just have one the one question I have, I mean, I agree with what you've done, is the the measure certainly talks about brain injuries, funding for people with brain injuries, but the definition of it is fairly broad to include things that I, at least, didn't think of as being related to brain injuries, more as, I'm not, the draft uses intellectual disabilities, but sort of things like epilepsy and cerebral palsy are not, to me, necessarily injuries as kind of either diseases or conditions that I'm wondering if we should ourselves not focus on the concept of injuries, at least not always, autism and cerebral palsy, epilepsy, maybe brain disorders is what the measure uses. I'm not sure. I see that.
Go ahead.
We were originally targeting people with brain injuries, and that community is divided into traumatic brain injuries as a result of a blow, and others acquired as probably lack of oxygen and a surgery or something like that. But there are other groups that are in our support groups and have conferences with us and similar symptoms. And from our perspective, cerebral palsy is an anoxic brain injury during birth. It's a deprivation of oxygen that causes symptoms very similar to ours. And epilepsy is a seizure condition, and many people with brain injuries do have seizure conditions also, just not the same. And so we do share a lot of things with them, and I was told that you can't make a law that's aimed at one group, and we weren't trying to make a law at one group. We were trying to say that if we were able to accomplish housing for people with brain injury, these people all have, a lot of the people have behavioral disorders.
Right.
Which means
let me slow you down because you just used the word disorder, and that's really what he's talking about, whether
okay.
we're going to use the word brain injury or brain disorder. So I think you're on the same page. I think he's just saying the measure itself uses the word disorder and that maybe we should stay away from the word injury. And so, you know, I don't know that it makes that much difference to your measure, but you use that word in here. So a lot of times when we write titles, we just try to, you know, match the words of the measure so that we don't cause confusion. So
right, and our reasoning is because we thought that the people with brain injury were the ones that are really sorely lacking in this need. So
right.
Thank you.
Okay. So I think disorders would be fine.
Okay, then I would suggest that it's just a little bit it matches the measure a little bit better to use the broader term than narrower one.
I would like to say something as well involving those involving the four initiatives. I'm a mentally disabled person who is fallen into the victim of the corrupt mental health system. And I've been given a garden variety of diagnoses over the years, like paranoid schizophrenia, mild autism, Asperger's, obsessive compulsive disorder. And I've been given a garden variety of medications over the years. And I still have those outbursts anywhere, including at my school, Metro State College of Denver. And I'm one of the people that needs a triple Tesla MRI that can correct that, where I can be able to see the diagnosis so I can get the right treatment I need and the right medications I need.
Okay,
and
sir?
How can it be into that initiative, Paula?
Okay. Well, I think you're talking about the next one, and we're just on housing this time. But the fact that we have behavioral problems is why we're not always compatible with other groups.
Right. Okay. Let's, why don't we keep going?
Okay. So then I think you can delete that language, starting with requiring all the way through injury on line 4.
You might just want to cut it and use it later, maybe.
Okay. Because, yeah, I think
it.
The first phrase of the,
right.
Once we're passed in connection therewith, should be talking about the amount. And so you can move it down. And again, I think we'd want to change the term brain injury to brain disorders there on line 6. Oh, and also in the phrase that you just moved at the end of it.
Well, perhaps we don't need to define the brain injury thing anymore if we know what the disorder is.
And one of my suggestions is we take that phrase out, that
that's
we don't
a good
have
point.
To say
yeah.
what how it's defined. And then in terms of the specifics of how the grants are awarded, I'd strike the language basically through from starting there on line 7 through line 10. So starting with designating. And continue to strike through formats. Okay, and then can you scroll? Okay. And then I think we could just say creating a board. Well, let's see. I guess we want to say whether it's the same board to oversee versus awarding the grants. I guess it's just the state that awards the grants through the program and the board oversees. So I think we're fine with creating a board to oversee the use of the grant monies and requiring that the permanent housing, such permanent housing, so strike the, and then you can strike for people with brain injuries. And even will, strike will, and requiring such permanent housing be staffed by individuals who are certified in brain injury care. And in that instance, it is specific as to brain injury, so
right.
I'm not sure we could change that to disorders.
May I?
Yes.
There's an entity through the Brain Injury Alliance of Colorado, I believe, that does have certification for brain injury care providers, and we feel that is exceptionally important.
Yeah, it's in there.
Okay.
We were just having a conversation about whether to use injury or disorder again.
Okay.
But those are my suggestions.
I think that's good.
Yeah. So why don't you move it, and then we'll collapse it.
Okay, I would move those changes as reflected on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So the way it reads right now, it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning state funding for permanent housing for disabled citizens with brain disorders and in connection therewith, requiring the state to use $10 million annually from the retail marijuana sales tax revenues to provide permanent housing for Colorado citizens who are disabled by brain disorders, creating a board to oversee the use of the grant monies, and requiring that such permanent housing be staffed by individuals who are certified in brain injury care. Do you have any comments?
Well, I was just going to say that the Colorado Brain Injury Program just changed its name, but they're already in the business of awarding grants, and so they're already.
Yeah, and that may be the entity, but it won't mean anything to the majority of the people voting on it, so we try to keep it very simple so that it'll appeal to anyone who reads it.
I just really appreciate this. Okay.
I move that we adopt the staff draft as amended.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So that one will be adopted, and the question will be changed to reflect the changes we made in the submission clause. And the next one is proposed initiative 2013-2014. I need to take up the single subject issue. Anyone on the board have any questions about the single subject?
Just for the record, do we want about the filing? I mean,
yeah. So we have previously, or we can just do them each separately, I guess. Want to do them separately? Let's do jurisdiction altogether. Well, then she'll have to vote differently.
Right. Well, okay. So I'll move that. We, as we did with 107, I'll incorporate our comments on 107 about the timing of the filing of number 108 and move that we find that this has substantially complied with the filing requirements and that we have jurisdiction to consider it.
All right. Second, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. All right, so now we're on the single subject topic. Any comments on single subject?
They dropped out to $5 million. I think it constitutes a single subject, and I move that we proceed to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right, that takes us to the question. So now we're going to do the same thing we did last time, which is work on the question. Okay.
Okay, I think they dropped the $5 million from the sales tax revenue out. So I don't know how this would be funded. And I guess my concern is that I really didn't want a program like this that we need so desperately to be the subject of a legislative battle where they unfund it.
Right. Well, let me just explain. We may end up putting that back in the question, which is what I think you're asking. But the question itself is the question to the voters. It doesn't capture everything that's in your proposal. It's supposed to capture the things that are important to people who would vote. So it would be plain language and easy to read. And, you know, those kinds of things are the things we're looking at. But we obviously can't get to everything. Just like in your last question, the person who does the grant funding, to the average voter, that's not going to be. Okay. They just need to know there's an entity. So that may come back in, but you don't necessarily need to concern yourself. We can't change the text of your proposal through the question.
Okay.
Okay.
So
we're just going to work on the question, unless you have any comments on what the staff draft was.
No, it's essentially mostly the same.
Okay, except the $5 million you would like to see in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So again.
Yeah, I'm fine with the $5 million, but if you have sort of a detailed plan, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a detailed plan, but I do think that the statement of the single subject could be simplified.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps just an amendment to the Colorado Constitution creating the Colorado Workers' Compensation Public Defender's Office to represent people with mental disabilities.
And get rid of the rest. Yeah.
Can I make a slight suggestion about that, which is I find the sort of similar to the last measure, the language workers' compensation public defender's office a little bit confusing and potentially misleading. And what's important, it seems to me, about this measure is creating an office with a funding source to represent people in certain circumstances. And so I thought maybe we could rewrite that slightly, because, you know, a public defender's office and workers' compensation have certain meanings to most people that this goes beyond, it seems to me. And okay, using that language, especially right up front, strikes me as problematic.
Yeah. I think especially the public defender aspect of it, people are going to think it's associated with a crime of some kind. Did you want to make a comment?
I'm willing for another title to be used. I wasn't really intending that they would represent everyone. I was intending they accommodate people to get legal representation, and if that failed, then represent them. So I'm not trying to take work away from attorneys that are out there.
Well, that's pretty much the public defender concept, but
okay.
It's just that, you know, public defender, that's more of a legal aid type thing. Public defenders are usually criminal attorneys, and yeah, it may just have a negative connotation.
So I sort of what I was thinking was an amendment creating either a fund or an office to, and we could discuss whether assist or accommodate or represent is the right word, people with mental disabilities, and then maybe if we need to, add on kind of a description after we talk about mental disabilities in, or we could just leave it.
Right. I mean, I think we could say to provide legal aid.
Well, or legal representation.
Legal representation, yeah.
Whether the word ensure, because in terms of both options of directly providing or assisting the acquisition of legal representation, whether you could, concerning, you know, the creation of a state office to ensure legal representation of people with mental disabilities, something along those lines. Would that address?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay, so we say creating a state office and then we can restore, ensure, and then just say legal representation of, take out represent or modify. I'm fine with that. Okay. Something along those lines, if that addresses Mr. Domenico's ideas.
Yeah, I think that's good. I'm okay with that.
Okay. And then moving down to the after in connection therewith, since we've removed the name of the office, I mean, whether it's important to at least notice that this specific office is created, despite the fact that the name may be somewhat confusing.
Right.
We could just say establishing the Colorado workers, and that would be possessive, plural possessive, compensation public defenders, singular possessive office.
You have a comment?
I guess I know that the public defender is usually criminal, but in this case, we're trying to create actually is in defense of the public's best interests.
Yeah, I mean, we understand what you're doing. We're just trying to make sure that the public understands what the terms are and doesn't confuse them with something they might not support.
I appreciate your patience.
And then I would, the next phrase I would simplify by just saying providing for the election of the chief public defender? So starting on line 5. And I think you could strike that whole, no, not the whole, the next phrase. I don't think that really about hiring sufficient staff is important enough to include in the title. Then I think you could have requiring the office to provide legal representation or assist in hiring legal representation.
Yeah, get rid of to either, or either, I mean.
Yes. So requiring the office and then to strike either. To provide legal representation or assist in hiring legal representation for people with mental disabilities who have workers' compensation claims. And then instead of all the details in the next phrases about, and I would just say establishing specific powers and duties of the public defender's office and the chief public defender, because the measure does both of those things. It's not just to the office. Establishing specific powers and duties of the public defender's office and the chief public defender. And I would strike the audit requirements, that phrase. No, don't go that far. To the end of line 12.
So we want to talk about the $5
million? The problem I have with the $5 million is that not in the text of the measure. It's not
right,
in
I'm
the actual...
To...
It's in their intent statement before the actual constitutional language, and so I'm torn.
I think the and the parts that are in there are going to require, I fear, a lot more than $5 million. And so the budget, were this to pass, would, wherever it were to come from, would be, I suspect, pretty large. So I guess I'm inclined to likewise leave it out. And just, it may be, maybe we want to add something about that, I'm trying to find the exact language, but, about how the office is essentially, I guess it's in the staff, the language about hiring staff. Shall hire a staff with adequate staffs to accomplish it. I don't know. I guess I'm inclined to leave, to just not mention that, that it creates this. It seems to require funding for it from whatever source. So I guess I'm inclined to agree with Ms. Eubanks. I'm not sure that the last language about reversion of money is necessary in the current draft. It's nice, but offices don't tend to leave a lot of unencumbered money left over, especially one with such important and potentially expensive duties as this one would have. It seems unlikely to have a lot of spare money.
You have a comment on that?
Yes, I didn't want to let this office be a political football every time we change governors and legislatures so that one would eliminate the funding and the other one would give it.
It is a very important subject, but I believe in the long run, it really will save the people of Colorado money. And I also, the reason we reverted it to the brain injury program to be used for grants is that I think an employer looking at his choices of either going down the road toward committing fraud and maybe getting caught, or recognizing that the less fraud that there needs to be prosecuted means more benefits available to all.
Well, we're not changing your text again. Okay. We're just looking at
the title. I'm sorry.
At the title. Yeah. No, that's fine.
So I would get rid of the what's now 13 to 15 as something that may be important in the measure. If this passes, of course, that will be part of the Constitution, but not necessarily a material part of it in terms of setting a title for voters.
Right.
I still kind of have a little bit of a problem with the just calling this the public defender's office, because it is, I think, a type of public defender, but we already have a public defender. And I don't want to mislead people that this is meant to take its place or replace the existing public defender who focuses on criminal law. And I'm afraid it might do that the way it's written now.
Establishing an office for legal representation?
How about accommodation?
Well, this is really about...
Well, I'm okay with either, you know, on line two, saying something about legal assistance or legal accommodation, which is, in fact, the word that the measure uses. I'm more concerned about lines four and five right now and
10.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe if we make clear what we're talking about up front, then using it later. And what I was considering was saying something about establishing the putting quotes essentially around the workers' compensation public defender's office, and then maybe explaining a little bit more about the details of what it's authorized to do, because it's. Maybe the
Colorado.
Way to do that would be to move lines 8 through 10.
Well, to make it all one phrase, so perhaps, you know, establishing the Colorado Workers' Compensation Public Defender's Office to provide legal representation or assist in hiring legal representation for people with mental disabilities who have workers' compensation claims? Would that, in terms of combining it?
I kind of like that. And then I still question whether we should change providing for the election, maybe change it to the chief of the office, or I just am concerned about, I think it's clearer this way, and maybe my concerns aren't as important at this point, but I just wonder if we need a little more clarity.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I like that.
Yeah, I would rather have chief of the office, because we have a chief public defender.
Right, we do.
Yep. Your comment?
So are we not going to be able to put the $5 million back in?
Not into the question, because the way your initiative is worded, the $5 million isn't actually a part of the law that would go into the Constitution. It looks like it's what you intend to have funded annually, but it's not And it may end up taking more than $5 million to fund this. And so since $5 million isn't worked into any of your sections here, we can't put it into the question.
I just want to point out that the original did have the $5 million in the text. And so I'm afraid it'll be voted down because there's no funding mechanism. And I prefer that the people's tax goes to that, but.
Well, I mean, if it's passed, it'll be for the legislature to fund it. So, but I mean, the way you drafted it, the $5 million's not in the measure.
Okay.
I have one in terms of the changes that we've made so far, then in terms of whether we need changes on line 6, I think because now we've included, still have the name of the office, I'm comfortable with saying Public Defender's Office. But since we haven't really referred to the Chief Public Defender, we took out that reference, whether we want to just say the Public Defender's Office and its chief and then take out Public Defender, because otherwise we haven't used that term previous in the title, and that might be confusing. No. Down on line 6. You're off to say, strike the and put it, and then strike Public Defender after chief.
Do we need to mention the chief at all down there? I mean, he's part of the office, he or she. As part of the office. I mean, it does. There are specific tasks assigned to the chief. It's true, but
yeah, I'm fine.
All right, let's strike that.
Can you go back to the strike? Since we haven't adopted this yet, can we go back to the strike type? So I would move those changes as reflected on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right, let's go down to the title, do the read back. It now reads an amendment to the Colorado Constitution creating a state office to ensure legal representation of people with mental disabilities and in connection therewith, establishing the Colorado Workers' Compensation Public Defender's Office to provide legal representation or assist in hiring legal representation for people with mental disabilities who have workers' compensation claims, providing for the election of a chief of the office and establishing specific powers and duties of the Public Defender's Office.
So I move adoption of the title as reflected on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. So the changes in the submission clause will be reflected in the question. And then the next one is proposed initiative 2013-2014-109. Mr. Domenico, you want to make the motion about the timing?
Yeah, so I'll incorporate the comments we've already made about the timing of the filing of this measure, as we did with 107 and 108, and move that we find that it substantially complies with the requirements and move on to consider it.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. And the next issue is the single subject.
Any I have actually one possible jurisdictional question that I think is probably not jurisdictional, but I wanted to raise it, which is that the initiative power in Article 5, Section 1 is basically part of the legislative power, and removing specific individuals from office is typically not a legislative power. And so my question is whether this is even within the initiative power in Article 5 that we're all operating under here today. Like I said, I have a question about that. I don't know that it's a jurisdictional problem for us as opposed to a potential problem for the proponents somewhere else down the road, but I wanted to raise that in case anybody disagreed and thought that something had to be within Article 5 for us even to set a title for it.
Just looking down at our attorney.
My view is that if the board has jurisdiction to hear this matter, the subject that Mr. Domenico raised really goes to the content of the measure, which would have to be decided by a court after it passes. And so I think it's within your jurisdiction to hear it.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Okay. You want to do single subject?
I believe that proposed initiative 109 contains a single subject, and I move that we proceed to set a title for it.
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right. Yes.
I just have a question about the Article 5, Section 1 thing. I did look at the Constitution, and I thought that there were several places allowing for the recall of either elective officials or those appointed by them.
Right. There's a separate process for that, though. If you want to recall an officer, there's a separate recall process. And our question, and it's really not a question for us, apparently, it would more be if you circulated this and you got it passed, does it really qualify for something you can even do an initiative on? Because generally, you can only do an initiative on something that the legislature could pass. Okay. And the legislature couldn't pass something that says, we're going to remove an administrative law judge. There may be a recall process for that, but it wouldn't be the legislature's vote. So the process may seem the same to you because you're putting it up for a vote, but they're actually very different processes.
Yes, and I think that we were directed to someone who might inform us better on that, and we'd like to go through the correct process, but these judges are appointed and the public doesn't have a vote currently.
Okay.
Well, that depends on whether our other measure gets passed, right? But the point being, as usual, I've been proven wrong by Mr. Kneiser, so we can just move on and go ahead and set a title, and if that's a problem, it's a problem. If it's not, then great.
So I guess I just find the, I guess, a measure to remove, it just makes the question a little strange, but I suppose.
I think the difficulty is, and especially since, and I believe the explanatory notes that were included with the filing, that it's not amending the Constitution or statutes in terms of how, so can't start out the way we usually do.
Right.
And so I think perhaps this is the best we can do at this point.
Well, perhaps if we had better information, we would take it somewhere else and withdraw it from here.
Well, I'm not sure you got bad information about whether you could do a recall. It just may be that there are some things you just can't do. But you can try, and we can set a title and go ahead. I agree with Ms. Eubanks, I'm not quite sure how to write a title for this, partly because of the problem I have with what exactly it is. But if we're going to, I think the draft is fine.
Always nice to approve one of the staff drafts.
Yeah, I didn't have any changes.
They work so hard.
Yeah.
All right, then I move that we adopt the staff draft, period.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. The draft is adopted, and that takes us to 2013-2014, number 110, which is similar. You want to make your motion?
So why don't I make a motion incorporating all of our comments about the two potential jurisdictional issues, the timing, as well as the Article 5 question, and that we go ahead and move on to considering the measure.
The only problem is then she has to vote. No.
No on one? All right. Well, okay, then I move that we incorporate our comments about the timing only at this point, and that this measure substantially complied with the timing requirements, and that we can consider other issues.
All right. Second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay.
I'll also also move that number 110 has a single subject.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye. And I'll move that we adopt the staff draft.
Second.
Aye.
Aye.
All those in favor? Aye. All right. Okay. So that one is adopted and as submitted. So those are your four measures today.
I want to express my supreme appreciation. We never thought we'd get this far. And I just think you've been so kind. Thank you.
Well, thank you for participating in the process.
I second the supreme appreciation.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. The next measure we have is Proposed Initiative 2013-2014, number 121.
Morning. My name is John Anderson. I'm with the law firm of Holland and Hart, representing the proponents, Representative Frank McNulty and Representative Jerry Sonnenberg.
And we have a jurisdictional issue potentially on this one. Mr. Anderson, I think you know what the issue is. Did you want to make your record? And then
yeah, I'll make my record. Well, I don't know. I don't know if there's still an issue because we faxed, we had a review and comment hearing the day before the initiative was due. We faxed our initiative to the Secretary of State's office on Friday at 2:38 p.m. And then on Monday, we got a little nervous because we hadn't heard anything. So I called on Monday morning to confirm receipt and didn't hear back. And I sent two emails on Monday asking why we hadn't received confirmation. Then finally on Monday, I just kept calling until I talked to someone. And at one point, I thought I was told that they had received it, and then later at Tuesday, I was told that they weren't sure if they'd received it and asked me to send the fax confirmation. So I sent the fax transmittal over, and then I sent the fax confirmation report over, and at that point, they thought I was told that they believed that ended their concerns, but then I was told that that's something that Title Board had to consider rather than staff. So that's the last place I heard it was left.
Okay.
Before we proceed further, I think there may be another jurisdictional issue in terms of whether both proponents are here.
Representative Sonnenberg, I texted. He was on the floor, and he's on his way over right now.
I'd also like to point out that the proponents have not yet signed or executed the affidavit of designated representative.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, why don't we...
I wasn't sure. Can we address the jurisdictional issue?
We don't have jurisdiction without both proponents.
Yeah, we can't even.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually
Supreme Court has
been clearly stated to us by the Supreme Court last time I was soft on people.
Yeah.
that.
Here's my right on cue. My other proponent.
And, okay, great.
We've got the affidavit of Representative McNulty.
Okay.
Do we execute with you? There wasn't a notary.
I think we can tend to wait on, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get a notary.
Don't sign it till the notary's here, please.
Yes, we're sticklers about that. We don't want to have to admonish our own staff.
He likes a grand entrance.
So there's, I guess, three potential questions. One is, if we already sort of told ourselves that when we were talking about the last four measures that the timing deadline is not jurisdictional. So there's a question whether we can ignore all the facts questions and just say that this, like the last four, substantially complies even if the first time it was submitted or received was on Monday. That's a harder question for me than it coming in later than 3 o'clock on Friday. So I don't know if we want to debate that because there's two other questions. One is, whether we're going to have an evidentiary fight about when it was actually faxed over. Do we care about that? Are we just going to accept kind of the evidence that we have in front of us that it was at least attempted to fax and like Elvis Dumerville, somehow something failed to in the transmission, or are we going to say that even if it was sent, it had to be received by 3 o'clock? Those are all sort of questions I have. I'm not sure which one it makes the most sense to talk about first, because any one of them could sort of resolve this one way or the other, probably.
Mr. Can I add one thing? Just for the record, we did supply Secretary of State's office with the transmittal record and the fax confirmation report. And so it was my understanding that this was addressed. Okay.
I saw your evidence, and that's what my question is, whether we're going to, whether the board cares about that one way or the other.
I'm satisfied it was sent, whether it was received or not. I'm not comfortable enough saying whether that would be an error on our end or, you know,
right.
In terms of substantial compliance, if somebody sends it and they have a receipt that they sent it, if we didn't stamp it in, I'm not going to hold that against a proponent.
All right. Well, I agree with that. I mean, there's no reason for me to disbelieve that it was sent on time before the deadline. And if a jetliner can disappear without a trace for a month, then certainly a fax can disappear for a few days. So I'm okay with it then. And so then the question is, does that matter? Is it when we received it or when we sent it? That, I think, is a hard question. I guess unless we're going to say that Monday is substantial compliance with the timing anyway, and then we don't have to worry about it. I'm nervous saying that Monday is substantial compliance for a few reasons. So I think we probably do need to answer the question whether we consider something sent before the deadline to have been submitted, which I think is the language of the statute governing it. I'm inclined, for similar reasons to what I expressed about 107 to 110, to say that where there's ambiguity about the language, that we should interpret it as complying, that submitting, the statute could have said received, stamped. There could be all sorts of rules you could have in place, but instead we just say you have to have submitted it. I'm inclined to say I think we should interpret that as meaning when they sent it, because there's not a clear rule otherwise, and proceed from there.
I agree.
And I, just for the record, I disagree. In terms, I mean, of our previous discussion regarding the filing deadline, I don't think there's any ambiguity there. And as to what submission means, I believe that means received by the public official. In terms of, if you view it as Mr. Domenico is suggesting, putting it in the mail, that would be sending it on that Friday and would be received by the office the following week. I think
right,
that
and that's
opens
the
up.
Rule in lots of places.
And I think to say that it means actually received by that time on that day is consistent with the normal practice. The initiative process contains deadlines for everyone involved, both proponents and opponents, and this title board. And I think there's no ambiguity there. I think if you say submission means sent, that the beginning sentence of subsection 1 of 140-106 makes no sense, because the Secretary of State is to convene a title board meeting after the first submission after an election. And if submission means sent, how is the Secretary of State to know that a title board is to be convened, because it's not until received? And so to me, submission under 106 sub 1 means received by the Secretary of State's office. And for those reasons, I don't believe, and I'm definitely not comfortable saying there's substantial compliance in terms of the Monday. I mean, like I said, yeah. I think it needed to be received by 3 o'clock on that Friday.
And I guess my issue is,
you know, if somebody sends it at 3 o'clock and our email's down that day and we don't get it till Monday, I mean, at what point is it our fault and not, you know, I mean, if there's an expectation when you electronically transmit something that there is an immediate receipt of that. And if the issue is on the end of the receiver, I think that that's a problem. And so that's where I'm coming from on the substantial compliance and just, you know, taking them at their word that, you know, they sent it and they have a fax receipt of it, which shows it should have gone through. You know, I don't know how else to take it except that something happened on our end, and I don't think that we can hold it against a proponent.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be interpreted either way. It causes problems either way. To me, it's ambiguous. Maybe we as a board should adopt a rule at some point, or the Secretary of State should adopt a rule to clarify it. But in the absence of the rule, seems to me, you know, as tempted as I am to discourage people from waiting till this last marathon dreadful meeting to file everything and therefore to be a stickler for this stuff so people will stop waiting till we have 45 things on the agenda. My personal comfort is probably not a good reason to vote against it. I think a rule would be good, but in the absence of a rule, I think it's ambiguous. And where things are ambiguous, unlike with the two proponents having to be present, where the Supreme Court said the statute very clearly was written precisely to require their presence throughout the process, this I can't read as being quite so clear, and I'm not inclined to kind of read our statute strictly to, in the absence of, as I said before, clear language requiring it. So I would move that despite some misgivings, I guess, that we find that the measure was submitted within the statutory deadline.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. Then we have a couple other issues. One is single subject. The other is the text and the conflicting issues you had raised last time, which hadn't really conflicting ballot titles.
Yeah, well, this one I think is less problematic probably on that front than some of the others. But we do need to be kind of, I think that's a title question to me, if I understand what you're raising.
Well, I'm sorry, what's the issue we're discussing now?
Maury, do you want to read that part of the statute?
Sure. It's 1-40-106, subsection 3B. It says, ballot titles shall be brief, shall not conflict with those selected for any petition previously filed for the same election, and shall be in the form of a question which may be answered yes for or no against.
So, shall not conflict.
Well, we've had actually like dueling ballot measures before, mm-hmm. where one says, the two I remember were affirmative action and same-sex marriage, I think. I don't think that means conflict. I don't think that's the problem that the statute is trying to avoid. What I think is, where you have four measures that kind of do the same thing in the same way, we have to be clear about it. I also don't think this really conflicts. It's sort of if one of these other ones goes into effect, this may have some new effect. So I don't think on this one that's a problem.
Okay. All right. Then you want to go to single subject?
We did have one person sign in for public comment. She indicated she wanted to comment on the jurisdictional issue.
Oh, okay. Mr. Anderson, do you want, or, well, Ms. Tierney, which jurisdictional issue? Single subject or the receipt?
The receipt.
Okay, why don't you go ahead then?
Thank you. Martha Tierney of the law firm Heiser Paul on here on behalf of the proponents for the measures 85 through 93, Greg Diamond and Caitlin Leahy. We'd just like to adopt the comments of Ms. Eubanks in terms of the receipt issue and substantial compliance. For the record, we don't believe that that measure met the terms of the statute, and thus the board doesn't have jurisdiction.
All right.
Can I just ask a quick question? Would it have made any actual difference to you? I mean, you wouldn't have gotten to see it any sooner, would you?
We wouldn't have gotten to see the measure any sooner. Well, we would have, as everybody does at this time of year who is involved in this process, we monitor very closely when measures are being filed. Mm. And on this topic in particular, as you are well aware, there are lots of measures. And so we are spending an inordinate amount of time prepping for all of these different measures and how we are going to respond to the different nuances that each presents. So, yes, I believe that when we saw that there was no measure, we took that as a good sign and did not spend time that we might otherwise have spent prepping.
Over the weekend?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Anderson, do you want to tell us what you believe your single subject to be?
For the record, I just want to make one more comment about jurisdiction, because I think the board had a conversation about two things, whether jurisdiction was appropriate in our case, and then there was a more general policy discussion about whether Monday is substantial compliance or not. And it seemed like Ms. Eubanks, a lot of her comments were around whether receipt by Monday would be substantial compliance. We don't believe that that's our case here, and really I think our case needs to be based on the facts that we sent the fact we have a fax confirmation receipt, and we believe that that was substantial compliance. So I it just felt like there's two different discussions going on there, and I don't want them to be confused on the record.
And let me just clarify that in terms of my comments, in terms of my reference to substantial compliance and filing on Monday in terms of the email transmission, to me Monday, there's no substantial compliance. I mean, it's a 3 o'clock deadline, mm-hmm. and that's it. So it doesn't matter what happened on Monday. That is not substantial compliance to me. So to me, the whole issue is whether or not you filed before 3 p.m. on that Friday.
Right.
That's my issue. And because it wasn't received, my position is it was not filed in time for us to hear it at this meeting. And my vote indicates that. But that's my position.
Okay.
Single subject?
Single subject. we believe the central purpose of this initiative is to prohibit local governments that ban oil and gas activities from receiving oil and gas revenues derived from those activities. The other provisions spell out details related to implementation. We believe it's clearly a single subject, but we're happy to discuss any points that you may have.
Any questions from the board? Any discussion?
I believe that the measure constitutes a single subject, and I move that we proceed to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Do you have any comments on the staff draft?
I do.
Okay.
My only comments on the staff draft are I'll just read it because I don't know how to describe the change. A change to the Colorado revised statutes concerning the distribution of oil and gas revenues and in connection therewith prohibiting a local government that, and this is where I have a change, in any way limits or prohibits oil and gas production or development. I don't believe the word in any way limits or is accurate, because our initiative is drafted so that any ban, moratorium, suspension, or other act that effectively prohibits oil and gas development is what triggers this, and it in any way limits could be read as a reasonable environmental regulation that has a minimal limitation.
So you would prefer that it just read a local government that prohibits?
That's correct. And then the second paragraph making the same change. But other than that, we are comfortable with this draft.
And it would only be during the prohibition that you wouldn't receive the revenue?
Correct.
So if it was a moratorium, it would be
when the moratorium
ends. Yeah, okay.
If I could ask Mr. Anderson a question.
Yeah.
In terms of the types of revenues that we're talking about, I know the measure talks about revenues administered by the state, but are we talking basically oil and gas severance tax revenues? Are there other types of revenues? And the reason I'm asking is up in the statement of the single subject, it says distribution of oil and gas revenues, which I'm not sure is exactly very descriptive, whether or not at least it should see state oil and gas revenues or tax revenue. I'm just trying to get a better idea of the scope of the revenues that would be impacted by your measure so that we can properly describe them.
Yeah, I had a similar thought, and I thought the fact that later in that paragraph it specifies administered by the state, I thought that was an accurate description. That is our intent, that it would be oil and gas revenues administered by the state, whether through grant funding or otherwise.
So perhaps on the statement of single subject, if it said concerning the distribution of state oil and gas revenues, would that be an accurate clarification? I assume all the revenues that are being impacted are those that are collected by the state and then distributed to local governments pursuant to a variety of laws.
Yeah, my fear on that is when you say state oil and gas revenues could be misinterpreted to mean oil and gas production by the state. In other words, like your Russia type of situation, which I don't think would be accurate. So I thought the way it was described, stating all oil and gas revenues administered by the state, was a more appropriate way to word it.
Okay. Right now, it's just to say oil and gas revenues. I mean, that could be
how
companies' profits.
Okay.
For all I know.
What if we repeat what's described later and put a change?
Administered by the state.
Oil and gas revenues administered by the state.
Okay, so I would move that change on line 2 after revenues administered by the state. And then the only other, I think it's unusual to say a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes. I think usually we say an amendment.
An amendment.
And so to change that language, I'm sorry.
So is that true if it's a new section?
Yeah. It's still.
You're amending the revised statute.
Okay.
And I would support getting rid of the language suggested by the proponent, the any regulation or wherever it said that.
In any way limits?
In any way limits, yeah.
On line 3?
Right. And say
I only questioned whether in any way should stay. I think I'm okay either way. The real problem was the limits language,
right.
I thought. And I don't know. I think it's probably okay either way. But there is a reason people use moratoria and suspensions, because they're sort of not technically prohibitions themselves.
And I think we could fix that if we wanted to, if you think it's central by whenever it says receiving any oil. Oil and gas revenues administered during that period, or?
Well, that's a question I had actually for the proponents.
During the prohibition?
I have an actual question about the functioning of the measure in both subsection 2s of 101 and 102, it talks about, of 102, it's subsection 3, talks about the local government's share shall be restored. Same basic language in 101.2. So my question is, Is the intent of the measure that once your prohibition is lifted, you get the money that you forfeited before back, it's restored to you, or that you forfeited it, it's gone, and once the prohibition is lifted, you get to start back up receiving it just going forward?
Mm-hmm. It's the latter, and is our intent that 102.1 made that clear in that when a suspension, moratorium, ban, or effective prohibition is in place, during that time period, you cannot receive associated revenues. And I thought that was clear that it defined when they shall not receive those revenues. But no, it's not our intent to have any retroactive effect, both in terms of prohibitions or restoration.
All right, that makes sense to me. I just wanted to make sure. And then I think your language makes sense.
So it would be prohibits oil and gas production or development from receiving any oil and gas revenues. Do we need to say again administered by the state, or could we just say during the prohibition? We either say it, get rid of that line, or we phrase, or we add it to the end. So just add it to the end for now, during the prohibition.
We're comfortable with the language as is, or as amended, I should say.
All right. Sharon, you
I'll move the changes as reflected on the screen.
I'll second it.
All right. Let's collapse it, and I'll read it, and then we'll...
And then we're going to address the submission clause next.
No, the changes in the in that text will be okay. Reflected in the okay. Submission clause. So. Okay, so Maury, could you look at 140-106(3)(c)? Just as to whether we should be using the word an amendment or a change.
Does it use a change?
Yeah, I think it says that in the statute.
Which provision?
1-40-106(3)(c).
Oh, okay. You're correct, correct.
Looking at Troy's text.
Yep.
Okay. A change. All right. So the way it reads right now, it would be a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the distribution of oil and gas revenues administered by the state and in connection therewith prohibiting a local government that prohibits oil and gas production or development from receiving any oil and gas revenues administered by the state during the prohibition and requiring those revenues to be redistributed to other local governments that allow oil and gas production or development.
I think we have a pending seconded motion, right?
Right. Oh, okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So the changes in the designated title will also be in the submission clause. And I think you didn't have any other matters, did you?
I do not.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for your time.
Can we take a 5-minute break before we start the rehearings? Is that all right?
Second.
You're the boss.